Space was always something that was front and center for me. In part, I'm just naturally curious, and my mind likes to wander, and the infinite expanse of the far-off untouched universe is a great place to do that, obviously. But my upbringing, of course, played a huge role as well. Both of my parents worked in aerospace, something I myself started doing at the age of 19, and still do. Growing up, my father in particular would always tell us how incredible it was seeing the moon landing on TV in 1969, and he would always share all kinds of random facts about the various rocket programs that led up to Apollo. Mercury, Gemini, Neil Armstrong, Jim Lovell, Al Shepard, John Glenn, Gus Grissom, all that stuff was regular mentions whenever the topic of space came up. To this day, the picture of Ed White performing the first American spacewalk in 1967 on the Gemini 4 mission is one of my all-time favorite space images, or just pictures of anything, really. I also remember there being a large model of a Saturn V, complete with a lunar lander, slowly being destroyed by me and my brothers, as it was mostly used as a toy. I vividly remember seeing Apollo 13 with Tom Hanks, and scoffing at the oddball claim you'd hear now and again that the moon landing was a hoax. For the most part, it seemed like that was an idea that only popped up once in a while on late-night shows like Coast to Coast AM, or even the History Channel later on. The moon landing was always just a fact, and not just a fact, but a defining moment or act of American preeminence, a symbol of some sort of moral right to rule, or even imperative, to be the dominant superpower of the planet. But as I've gotten older, I've increasingly become skeptical of the government. And along with it, anything the government has ever said, or done, or hinted of doing. After all, most of the big conspiracies that get talked about involve the feds one way or another. Whether it's aliens, the JFK assassination, Epstein Island, the COVID-19 fiasco, the list goes on and on. Even President Ronald Reagan is famously quoted as saying, "The most terrifying words in the English language are, 'I'm from the government, I'm here to help.'" With that said, most of my skepticism of government doesn't really even come from conspiracy theories. It's the oddball trip to the DMV, paying taxes, poorly maintained roads, even though I pay taxes, politicians flagrantly lying on TV, schools teaching utter nonsense, insane foreign policy that saw many in my generation deployed to the Middle East, for really no good reason. And at the moment, has us all flirting with an all-out war with the other leading nuclear powers of the Earth. And honestly, even my own experience just working in a production environment, you really get to see the world and how it really is just made up of ordinary people. And a lot of them don't change much from high school. They just tend to have more complicated circumstances and more money to screw up. But I digress. This podcast is about the moon landing. Well, NASA is a government agency, after all. One that does not always, but certainly is used as a political tool. After all, the space race was about beating the Soviets, and the space shuttle, and especially the current SLS rocket programs, were, in a lot of ways, bloated pork projects that probably have more to do with protecting jobs and corporate handouts than any real testable goal. So, should I just accept the moon landing because they said so? It feels kind of like that's where we are at times. In this context, it can be tough. I won't rehash everything. I'm going to assume you're familiar with all the major claims about the alleged faking of the moon landing. It was filmed in a studio using bungee cords. It and the astronauts couldn't survive passage through the radiation belt. You can't communicate through the radiation belt. It was a distraction from the Vietnam War. It was to bankrupt the Soviets. There's no stars in the photographs. Where are all the moon rocks? How could we have lost the technology, and why can't we rebuild it? Along with a bazillion other claims about little issues here and there. Even if you could or do disprove one thing or another, there's always something else. It can actually be kind of an overwhelming subject, taken at face value. I mean, just on paper, it seems like the things are stacked against the moon landing being real. So, I think in recent years, among my own millennial generation, the idea that the moon landing was faked is probably more popular than ever. And you know, I can't blame them. As a child of the late 80s, my entire life has been one of nonstop war. Political lies from a generation of rulers that can barely operate a cell phone, domestic conflict, increasingly short boom and bust financial cycles, glaring federal deficits, unstable and now not even guaranteed social programs that may or may not even be around in a decade, the decay of the overall family unit, and the onslaught of the woke madness. The disappearance of a good-paying entry-level factory or sales job, and a country that increasingly resembles some distant globalist Leviathan empire, more than the patriotic country my father so happily reminisces about seeing land on the moon. Was it all really just an elaborate lie to placate the masses? I've certainly become more tolerant of the conversation over the years, and it even became a regular part of my lingo at work. Let me explain that a little bit. I work at a large corporate aerospace manufacturing company, and I think anyone who has worked at a large company or government is going to understand my next point. Oftentimes, you'll be involved in a meeting that ultimately just results in another meeting, each person in the meeting seeking to defend their little section of the project and point the finger at someone else. Still more people exist merely to be the middlemen between two groups. No one seems to actually do anything, except maybe one or two people, who do it slowly. And the rest of them seem to mostly just grift on top of that. You have to realize that in many cases like this, the people in the meeting may all have $100,000 a year salaries, health insurance, or retirement. So when I encounter meetings or occurrences like this, I tend to hang up and end with something like, "And this is exactly why we never landed on the moon," to the other people who sit around me. Now, I say that tongue-in-cheek, but I do kind of mean it. Our bloated bureaucracies consume precious resources and seem to only produce more red tape to slow down the people who do or could actually work. How could a society that is ran like this produce anything as truly groundbreaking as the Apollo program? But then one day, a friend of mine sent me a podcast he thought I might enjoy. Conservative commentator Glenn Beck was interviewing Charlie Duke. Charlie Duke was the youngest man to ever walk on the moon, being only 36 years old when he did so, aboard Apollo 16. I'll link to that in the show notes and over at loreandlegends.net. But for those of you who don't like Glenn Beck, don't worry about it. This isn't really a political episode. It's just about the moon landing and Charlie's life. It's really good. I recommend checking it out. So, in that episode, though, Charlie discusses, at some length, the speed and the efficiency of the Apollo program, the incredible hands-on nature of Wernher von Braun and many of the German engineering staff brought over as part of Operation Paperclip, and the sort of make-it-work-or-move-on attitude and the willpower to just get things done. Even more incredible is Charlie mentions at the end being at NASA post-Apollo, in a position where he could probably stick around and fly the first few space shuttles if he wants, but he becomes so burned out by the new layers of red tape management bureaucracy that had taken over, he just couldn't do it anymore. And it all came into focus for me. This is the real reason why we can't land on the moon today. And we really did lose the technology. And in some sense, I can explain why with my own first-hand experiences in aerospace manufacturing. So, that's really the premise of this episode. That one little nugget where you see, if we landed on the moon in 1969, why can't we land on the moon today? Did we really lose the technology? Why can't we just rebuild that stuff? So let me give you a few examples. The F-22 Raptor is currently the preeminent air superiority fighter plane of all of planet Earth. But development of this began in the 1980s, slowed down as the Soviet Union collapsed, and the plane didn't really even fly until 1997. Initially, they wanted to make some 700 aircraft, but ultimately it got cut down to less than 200, with production ending in the year 2011. Now, just a few years after that, it becomes apparent that nations like China and Russia are quickly moving to establish peer or near-peer adversaries to the now aging F-22. So, Congress and the Air Force looked into restarting production of the F-22. But there's a catch. That supply chain doesn't exist anymore. Much of the tooling has disappeared. The experienced workers have all moved on to other things. And the manufacturing space itself is now occupied by new programs. The cost of restarting production for something you have already built once before is now a tremendous obstacle and must be weighed with putting the money towards something more up-to-date than an aircraft that was originally penned in the late 1980s.
Kelly Clarkson here to let y'all know that it's the holidays at Wayfair. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to get your home holiday ready.
Wayfair, every style, every home. Managing and understanding your agency's sustainability data is essential. IBM Envizi, a market-leading sustainability software solution, empowers federal agencies to simplify data collection, drive efficiency, and deliver actionable insights. It's not just about tracking data. It's about creating a more sustainable future while supporting mission-critical operations. As an IBM Platinum Partner, 4 Inc. trusts IBM Envizi to provide unmatched speed and precision in driving sustainability and operational excellence. Visit 4inc.com/envizi to learn more.
For more than 50 years, National University has been a military-friendly, yellow-ribbon school that understands the importance of honor and commitment. With 4 and 8 week classes available, year-round enrollment, and more than 190 programs to choose from, we help veterans just like you define the next chapter of their careers. Learn more at nu.edu. That's nu.edu.
Now, for those of you who don't have the background in manufacturing something like an airplane, well, let me just tell you, it is obviously a very incredibly complex machine with thousands upon thousands of parts. Many of those parts are things that are built by smaller companies using specialized machines and molds we call tooling. So when I say tooling, that's what I mean. It's all the jigs and the molds and the things you have to make the part or make the parts fit together or to work on the part so the part doesn't fall apart as you're doing stuff to it. All of these parts make their way to the assembly areas that you might catch a glimpse of in pictures on like the History Channel or Discovery or the news, and then they're assembled into a final product. In most cases, a good assembly mechanic might take 5 years to really get proficient at his job. And the reality is, you can't just replace them all with robots, because the truth is, no matter how good they are, robots just are not good for all tasks. And they always have a limited functionality relative to a competent human who can do various jobs on the fly. You can't really tell a robot to turn around, grab a different tool, and do something completely different on a slow day. So, the point to that example is that between the years 2011 and 2017, we quote-unquote forgot how to build the F-22 Raptor. Now, that may seem too simple, and it probably is, but I can promise you that something like the Apollo program is more than that on steroids. More than we could possibly imagine. You may not even appreciate that blueprints in that era were physical paper drawings that a person made. People literally sat down and drew those things. There were no real computers, there was no digital library, there was no CATIA modeling. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of even more low-rate one-off production parts from long-defunct suppliers made on tooling that has long since been smelted down rather than consuming precious floor space. In fact, one of the buildings in Tulsa, Oklahoma that produced bombers and pieces of the Apollo rocket now just produces yellow school buses. When a seasoned engineer or mechanic leaves, all their years of learned experiences referred to as tribal knowledge just walk out the door. Even if you had the floor space and all the proper jigs and tools and a willing and available supply chain from raw material to finished products, no one would really know how to put it back together. And let me tell you that just read the instructions is usually not enough. I can also attest to the fact that this same problem plagues something even younger than the Apollo program, the B-1 bomber, which is re-emerging as a strategic asset, but is a product of the 1970s and 80s, and there's a rush to re-engineer replacement parts. Now, even worse, look at all the programs a huge company like Boeing has had with a plane like the 737. An aircraft that entered service in 1978 and has been in some form of continuous production ever since. We almost forgot how to build something that we never even stopped building. I can also share an observation that the inevitable brain drain that is happening as the boomer generation retires is very real. The lost COVID-19 years only exacerbated this problem, and an infatuation or feeling of obligation towards abstract 4-year college degrees has made much of the millennial and Gen Z generations squander their 20s in useless programs, all while installing an unrealistic bias against blue-collar or merit-based work. There's often not enough Gen X or elder millennials like me who lived the last analog childhoods to make up the difference. Now, as if that wasn't enough, American corporations, much like Boeing, are ran by finance people, more interested in a near-term stock payout than a long-term, stable, forward-pushing manufacturing company aiming to advance the human condition. So, it should come as no surprise that Boeing, who famously left some astronauts stranded on the International Space Station after some problems with the Starliner capsule, is also the lead contractor on the often forgotten SLS rocket program, which is years behind schedule and severely over budget, with only one unmanned launch, despite, in some ways, just being a rearranged thing of space shuttle components. So, it's all true, and I see it every day. American manufacturing is not in good shape, and there is no magic fix. So, we did land on the moon. There's plenty of evidence, including pictures of the sites from recent orbiter spacecraft. It was just a different time, in a different culture, with vastly different priorities and motivations and population. The reason we can't land on the moon today, and the reason so many more people seem open to the idea that it was all a hoax, is because it's hard to look at the state of American manufacturing, let alone the state of America today, and think that we could possibly do anything like that at that scale. Even at those prices adjusted for inflation, I don't think we could pull it off, let alone pull it off and endure catastrophic failures like they did with Apollo 1 and Apollo 13. Now, that all sounds pretty bleak, but I'm not going to leave it there. There are some very bright spots in the future. Just in regards to space, Elon Musk's SpaceX is certainly one of them. And whether you like Twitter or X or not, the ability to eliminate some 80% of the staff and somehow do more business and roll out more features is incredible. The idea that this might be carried over to Congress is incredibly encouraging. In a recent interview with a BBC reporter in regards to a new tax on farmers being proposed in the UK, Jeremy Clarkson of Top Gear fame made a comment about firing any government worker whose job can't be clearly explained as a way to shore up the budget and forget about the tax. Despite all the pessimism I seem to have laid out in this episode, I do think there is a real desire for a return to a merit-based, cut-the-bullcrap-and-move-on mentality. It's growing and growing, and it's getting more socially acceptable to talk about, especially in the younger generation. You just hear more about trades rather than the old learn to code or you have to go to college to do something. And in terms of conspiracies, there's a real chance that we do get some answers on some of those long-standing grand conspiracies like the JFK assassination, UFOs, or more recent ones like Epstein Island or even 9/11. And maybe once again, we will get to see the United States land on the moon if places like SpaceX and Blue Origin can keep doing what they're doing. And maybe after that, the real conspiracies won't be things like, did we or did we not land on the moon in the 60s, but who or what systems or institutions were holding us back from doing it again all along. Now, certainly there's lots of other things you could talk about in regards to the moon landing and was it a hoax or not, but the one that always stood out to me was, what happened to the technology? Where did it go? And I hope this episode kind of helped you put some thought into that and see. It really is easy to lose technology. It's not that hard. We do it all the time, even with far less complicated things. But that's all I had on that topic for this episode. Now, some other just housekeeping stuff. It's been the better part of a year since I put an episode out, and I think the last episode I did kind of had some audio stuff. I've just been busy, and it's been hard to get back into it and find time and do stories that not everybody has done a million times, but this is one that had been kind of sticking out to me for a long time, and it might be one we revisit, because, well, I'm a space nerd and there's all kinds of stuff I want to talk about here. But, again, the technology thing, to me, just... That's my lived experience. I can't help but see it. It really is easy to lose technology, to lose knowledge, you know, to lose support, to lose interest. That's all it takes. But I digress. Check out the show notes page. Go check out lorenlegends.net. Subscribe, share with your friends, and I hope to be back at it and get into at least one episode a month, if not more. I also have another podcast I do with a friend of mine called Up the Creek. We do that one also kind of sporadically, but usually at least once or twice a month. But that's all I got. Check out lorenlegends.net. I have a YouTube channel. Follow me there. Share the podcast with your friends, and see you next time.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.